And now it's time on Flame CCR to take a look behind the studio's green door to find out who is in today's chat room.
Midnight, one more night without sleeping, watching till the morning comes creeping. Green door, what's that secret you're keeping?
And now, are you listening?
You're listening to Flame Radio on 1521 Medium Wave and online. My name is John Cheek, and I'm honoured to be in the company of the Bogside mural artists Tom, Kevin and William. And of course, over here in England, we've seen many images of such artwork on walls in Northern Ireland in the past. Propaganda showing Republican images of the IRA, loyalist images of the UDA, the UDR, that sort of thing. But nowadays, the Bogside mural artists are actually putting up works of art that are not only about peace and reconciliation, but also trying to explain the truth. Let's fast forward a little bit, coming towards the end of the modern troubles before the IRA ceasefire. Kevin, along with William and his brother Tom, you formed the Bogside Artists. The Bogside Artists being Christians, being artists. You wanted to paint peace murals, but also you wanted to remind people of the truth of what happened in the troubles. And since 1993, the Bogside Artists have actually faced a lot of opposition, not least from Sinn Féin IRA, for wanting to portray the truth. How dangerous is the truth, and why are they so concerned to divert attention from the truth that you're looking to portray out there now?
First and foremost, throughout all the years of the conflict, Bogside and Derry was a focal point of the conflict in Derry. And the IRA, in their psyche, they would see the Bogside as almost like a place where they had fought the war, so to speak. And it was their territory, it was their stomping ground and their stronghold, so to speak. And so it was kind of like in those years, they were no-go areas. And it was kind of like, even though they seen themselves as freedom fighters and fighting the presence of the British soldiers on the streets and so on, but in a sense it was also about the control of communities, the communities where they operated out of, like the Bogside and the Craigan Estate. So it was kind of like having total control then, in those years. This is all prior to 1998 Good Friday Agreement, and they control those areas at the end of a gun, and that's a fact. So that's the way life was here for almost 30 years, that more or less accepted by everyone that these areas were the areas of the IRA, and people just become accustomed to that. And it was kind of like also anything that appeared in these areas in a very public way, in a propaganda sense, was by their activists. And that was the norm of the Bogside in those years of the conflict, where sloganizing on the walls, like, you know, join the IRA, up the IRA, Brits out, and so on. So it was broadly sloganizing and marking their territory with those propagandist markings that this is our turf. And for most people living here, that's the way it was. And if anyone who did not actually come from the Bogside and wanted to do something in a very public way, then obviously the route to them doing that, they'd have to go and see the leadership of the IRA and so on. So as they transformed from the IRA into Provisional Sinn Féin today and become a bona fide political party with a very strong mandate and power in government, but they still to this day operate with the psychic of IRA, you know. And so if you imagine a bona fide political party like Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams and them, and maybe Adams seeing himself as some kind of a statesman and so on, but still in all, them and everyone within Sinn Féin still think with the mind of the IRA. So for myself, William and Tom, growing up in this area, and we've had relatives also killed in the conflict, and basically the conflict become our lives, and we're from this area. And so by the time 1998 come around and a Good Friday Agreement was signed, obviously there was a lot of euphoria here. And even in 1994, when the IRA called a ceasefire, there was a lot of euphoria because people had just become conditioned to the fact that this is a never-ending conflict and it'll just continue from one generation to the other. So by the Good Friday Agreement, then obviously there was a lot of excitement, a lot of euphoria, and people kind of sensed there would be change here, but obviously not knowing which way the wind will blow. But the three, myself, Tom and William, we'd known each other most of our lives, actually, from a young age. And we got together and we looked at Roswell Street. And Roswell Street is a very historical street in the context of the Northern Ireland conflict. And as what we're talking about, Bloody Sunday happened on that street. The Battle of Bogside in 1969 happened on that street, which led to the introduction of the British soldiers onto the streets of Northern Ireland. For your listeners, Roswell Street in Derry is kind of seen as a main artery between the commercial part of the city and the Bogside. So they put it in simple terms. The role of the British Army and the police was to protect the commercial heart of the centre. And as far as the Bogside people were concerned at that time, was to keep the British Army out of the Bogside. So you have the street in the middle. So that's why this street had become basically a battle street for 30-odd years. But by 1994, myself, Tom and Will, we looked at the street and we seen it in a bigger way, recognised its historical significance. The place looked like a scene out of Beirut. It was a wasteland, nasty graffiti all over the walls, and just general 30 odd years of neglect, and you could well imagine what that was like. But we looked at the street and we had a vision, and our vision was that here on this very famous street, on the left hand side was all blocks of flats, and on each of those blocks of flat gable ends, 12 in total, are all the exact same dimensions and almost like a perfect blank canvas. So we had a vision of, here's an area that has been a battleground. It has been interpreted in many ways for propaganda reasons, for whose ever advantage. So obviously in all of those years, whether it's the media, whether it's the Republicans, whether it's the army, it's all propaganda. It's all distorted facts that would suit each of the players. And we looked at the street and we had absolutely no intentions of following any type of agenda like that, because we were thinking more of the ordinary men, women and children from these communities, because they never get mentioned. The only time that they get mentioned is as a victim, another number under the tally. And so we decided that we would do a series of murals along the entire length of the street, and this was 1994. And when we talked about the vision to do that, we had to be realistic and say to ourselves, you know, by the time we get to the other end of the street, would we be still alive? Would we be still together even? You know, so it was a serious challenge and totally unique. There's nothing else like this in Northern Ireland, what we created, the People's Gallery. There's nothing even like it in the world, and we know that. So we set out, our vision was to tell the people story, tell the story of the people of this community, what they endured from all sides, from the IRA, from the British Army and police and just about everyone else, because these were just ordinary people. Ordinary people no different to your listeners here on Flame Radio. And so we set out to tell their story independently of any political affiliation to anybody. And we made that quite clear from the beginning that we would not be propagandists and we have no political affiliation with no one, especially Sinn Féin. And all we needed, as far as we're concerned, was the consent of the people that live behind the murals, the ordinary people. We got their consent. These buildings here in Northern Ireland are owned by an authority here. They're called the Northern Ireland Housing Executive. And we also went and got their consent also to carry out our vision. And as far as we were concerned, that was the only consent we needed from anybody. And outside of that, anybody can kiss our backside.
Use religious, right?
Yeah, well, that was a lot of what I didn't want to use, you know. But anyhow, so that was our intentions, that we would create a series of murals that somehow told the truth and also would be universal. Not parochial to here, but universal. We'll be right back.
must degrade the values of a nation. We can't evade the end by taking a vacation. What would it take to make you listen? What about those children that are missing? Does it
Since then, with my own eyes, I've seen these murals. They are Christian. They communicate images of peace. There is lots of Christian symbolism. Also images of people like Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela, men and women of peace. And yet, as William says, you don't deal in opinions, you deal in facts. And the fact of the matter is that since these Christian murals have gone up, you have received opposition from Sinn Féin, IRA, and from other places as well. Why are they so desperate to cover up the truth?
Well, their opposition to us has taken many forms, from their lackeys in the community, like activists here on the ground, so to speak, right through to council, which they are the majority on the local city council, and also all the way down from Stormont. What I was trying to get at earlier was an explanation of that, because they see this as their area. And for the likes of Sinn Féin in particular, for them to go into a political process which they've become a part of. So if that be the case, if they want to go into the corridors of power and be a political party, but the way I see it, it was also paramount to them that they still maintain control of these communities.
For the sake of having
absolutely, yeah, because this is where it starts, this is where it begins, this is the type of areas that put them where they are today. So for them to be part of this process, obviously they still have to have total control of the areas that they do see as their area. And the nature of the murals that we were painting obviously wasn't doing no favours for them, which they would have preferred. More of the propagandist type murals. But what we painted and what we say on behalf of the people, they don't like it. You know, they don't like it because it's the truth. You know, for example, there's a mural just around the corner here. We call it The Death of Innocence. It's a young girl, 14-year-old Annette McGavigan, and she was the first child victim to be shot dead in our streets here in Derry in 1971. But in the mural, we set out to paint Annette as innocent and beautiful as we possibly could. But we juxtaposed her beauty and innocence against a chaotic background. And the chaotic background, it's just fragmentation, splintered, broken, chaotic background. And that represents to us the Northern Ireland conflict. You know, broken country, broken homes, broken cities, broken communities. And that's what that represents. But Sinn Féin and their lackeys here in the Bogside, they interpreted that mural, what was behind the schoolgirl was actually the aftermath of bomb explosions. That's how they interpreted that mural. Because all the murals that we painted on the street, there's no slogans on them, there's no text or anything like that. We let the work speak for itself. So about in the eye of the beholder and an interpretation, whatever we like, of a mural, but they interpreted what we were doing was us somehow trying to get at them. So they actually did interpret it. That was an aftermath of a bomb explosion behind her. And from their point of view, we were almost suggesting that this young girl was killed in this bomb explosion. So they went to great lengths to counter that. So currently here, there's an organization, it's called the Pat Finucane Justice Center, and they try and take cases of victims of the past and get an inquiry into their death. So Annette's family is participating in the Pat Finucane Center to get some justice or truth of what happened to Annette. But we know, being from here, what the Pat Finucane Centre is about. And again, it's just another extension of Sinn Féin. So a guy from the Pat Finucane Centre, he approached Annette's family and said, oh, they were going to have a little event and remember Annette and everything. But Annette's family were none the wiser about the politics on the ground and obviously not interested. So they had an event at the mural because they went seeking the consent of the family. And so they put a plaque on the mural. It's there today, and it actually says this is 14-year-old Annette McGavigan, murdered by the British Army in 1971. She was killed by the Army in 1971, but that gives you an idea what we're talking about here of the way they interpret us. And that's been an ongoing thing for years, you know.
Kevin, in South Africa in recent times, because they've had their own problems in a different way with apartheid, they've had a Truth and Reconciliation Committee led by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. If there was to be a similar sort of Truth and Reconciliation Committee here in Northern Ireland, would the idea of that sort of initiative just never get off the ground? Because there's people with too much to lose who don't want the truth to ever come out?
Absolutely. South Africa is a bit of a comparison, and particularly with the Truth Commission. But just on that note about Bishop Tutu and the Truth Commission, actually here in Northern Ireland, John, I think it was after the Good Friday Agreement in 1998, that they did try to set up something similar here. And Bishop Tutu was here in Northern Ireland and discussing things with former paramilitaries and former soldiers and so on. But it never really got off the ground because there was unionist opposition to a Truth Commission modelled exactly like South Africa. They were having none of that, the unionist people. What was it? Almost 4,000 people died here in Northern Ireland throughout the conflict, and something like 3,000 of those deaths to this day, 2016, are unresolved. So this is a serious issue in Northern Ireland about victims and the truth. There's been all kinds of mechanisms put in place to address the issue or even create inquiries. But in the end, even the victims' family members who are friends of ours, like Will and Tom's cousin Helen Deary, whose brother was shot dead, Kate and Linda Nash, whose brother and father was shot on Bloody Sunday, they are serious campaigners for truth and justice. And so some of the mechanisms that they attempted in Stormont, telling the public, oh, we're going to have inquiries into all the victims, but they were able to do a little bit of their own reconnaissance, so to speak, and find out that there was skullduggery here in operation. And just there last year, they shone a major light on Stormont, and they had to cancel a whole mechanism that they had in place for victims. So even with over 3,000 unresolved deaths and victims from all sides of the conflict, families of the British Army, family members of RUC men, Republicans, IRA, loyalists, and so on, they're all trying to get at some truth. And believe it or not, even with the division here in Northern Ireland between the Protestant and Catholic community, but there's unity among the victims. So you actually see victims' family members going to Stormont, and it's Protestant and Catholic people all together. But to be realistic, I don't think there'll ever be truth for the victims because of what you ask. Certain people have too much to lose with the truth, namely Sinn Féin, the Provisional IRA, and the British government. So if there was a truth commission modelled on South Africa, or if there was any genuine efforts to get at the truth, they would be the biggest losers. All about them and their closets, and they don't want that.
Kevin, you mentioned skullduggery, the same skullduggery that is still trying to keep the truth subverted about many of these deaths going back over several decades. That same skullduggery is coming up against some Christian artists, the Bogside artists, because you're looking to portray something of that truth in their backyard that they want to keep suppressed. Am I right in saying that?
You're absolutely right, John. I couldn't say it better myself. That is a fact. Because that's what we are about. We are about telling the truth as the way we see it. And we don't make no ifs or buts about that. And that's what these murals are about. That's how they're interpreted, even by the people that live here. These murals have become a talking point. A talking point that would bring up conversations and debates on the very thing that we're talking about here, victims and truth and justice. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. And tell it also. And this does not sit well with Sinn Féin because they don't want the truth to emerge of the past. And I don't truly believe it at all either. So yeah, because we are free speakers and free thinkers. And we do feel with the support of this community here in the Bogside that we are telling the truth, and this is why it's become thorn in the side of Sinn Féin in particular, and as you just said yourself, John, in their backyard.
To me, Kevin, what you're doing as Christian artists, as the Bogside artists, to me it seems prophetic in the biblical sense, prophetic in the truly scriptural sense, in that you are foretelling God's word for today, that you are foretelling God's truth to today. And obviously there's people with a vested interest who don't want that truth to be told, particularly if it's there on the side of a building, large as life, for all to see. Do you think your work is prophetic?
Yeah, absolutely. And as Will is saying here, that we all know what's happening around the world today, what they call global terrorism and so on. And we would see what Northern Ireland was over 30-odd years is, in a sense, a microcosm as to the global thing today with attacks and so on. And our own experience, which is the experience of seeing the truth and knowing the truth. And basically, what happens around the world today, I mean, we could almost predict it because of the things that happened here for many, many years, you know.
Kevin, we're all Christians, we all follow Jesus, and Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And if we claim to follow Jesus and follow the truth, it could be very costly to us. And I know that one of the Bogside artists, Tom, his property was attacked not that long ago and set on fire. How far are the three of you, how far are you prepared to go with portraying the truth, telling the truth, bearing in mind that Sinn Féin, IRA, clearly don't like what you're doing? How far are you prepared to follow the truth, knowing how dangerous it can be?
Yeah, even from the offset, at the very beginning of our vision to create the People's Gallery, we were under no illusions of where we were and what we were doing and how we were telling it and the repercussions. But, you know, the truth will always out and the truth will always surface, and we know that. So, in a sense, like incidences in the past where Tom's property being attacked, our former studio behind the Bogside Inn here in the Bogside was burnt. So, we see that as just tester. They remind us that there's still sinister characters around. But as regards truth, yeah.
The drama here is universal, and it's repeating itself constantly. What Kevin says is global terrorism is a perpetuation of the same agenda. You see, there are people in control of this world, as John F. Kennedy pointed out, that you can't see, you don't know they exist. But they do, in fact, control the fates and destinies of millions of people. As any Greek would tell you, they're high-powered political people, they're politicians, and they're controlling the media, especially in America. I mean, the five main stations in America control the same people. You know, Murdoch controls a lot of newspapers. There's a cabal, very, very powerful people. We meet up regularly, called them the Bilderbergs. To give one example, there's a community of foreign relations. We're hip to all this. You cannot separate the drama of the last 30 years of conflict in Northern Ireland. Bear in mind, Barack Obama was over here last year, you know. It's an example of peace and how it can be achieved, you know. You cannot accept what happened here in Northern Ireland as isolated from the events in the rest of the world. You can't do that. where it's part of a spider's web. You know, it's a strand of a web. Until you understand the whole web, you can't see this in context. But we can. And that's why we went to Württemberg a few years ago. We painted a mural in Austria, showing our understanding of this New World Order drive to institutionalize a form of government globally. Total governance over human destiny, you know, medically, intellectually, culturally, financially, right? Even genetically. Every conceivable dimension of the human being would be governed by these people according to their blueprint. And this has been going on for some time, since 1948 specifically. This is what's going on. We painted two murals to demonstrate this, and we also painted a mural. We painted a large banner here in Derry, alerting people to the New World Order and its purposes, which are satanic, basically. You know, there's nothing new in it. This is well prophesized in the scriptures. So we painted that mural in Württemberg, which shows a lot of people having a picnic. Seems like a family picnic, but in the background is a huge tank coming their way, and they're all locked into their tablets and their iPads and their phones, and they can't see it coming. But it's on its way as we speak. So that was a prophetic, you're talking about the prophecy and here in our work. That's a classic example of a prophetic message sent out into the world through Austria, through Württemberg. But Austria was the birthplace of Nazism, by the way. A perfect spot for it. We didn't choose that. That was chosen for us. So that's a prophetic message in Württemberg, and it was broadcast to the world. It was suppressed entirely by the media, especially here. Never mentioned. No photographs of it. Nothing. Nobody came around from Derry to interview us about our wonderful mural in Württemberg. And subsequently, we did another mural in Maribor, which was the European capital of culture for the year 2012. But a huge mural was unveiled by the Dalai Lama. And it was a protest against the suppression of the Tibetan people by the Chinese. And we did that in Maribor. Not a word about it. The BBC was phoned up by Herr Frankel, who was the mayor of Maribor. BBC was phoned up, ITV was phoned up, RTE were phoned up. All the mainstream television networks were phoned up. Come over to Maribor and photograph and film and interview the Bauxite artists and their great mural. Not a single one. And all expenses were going to be paid, by the way. Not a single one took up the offer. And that mural never appeared in any newspaper in Ireland or the UK, for that matter. The most suppressed artists that we are aware of in Europe at this moment in time are the Bauxite artists. And that simple fact is also suppressed.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
That's mind-blowing. John Cheek talked about murals that I found quite interesting about New World Order, future things to come, and the controlling influences that are around in the world at the moment. Now, a couple of friends of mine, Jono and his brother Adam, have often mentioned to me their interest in these things. And of course, Peter McGrath is very interested in the subjects of the Second Coming with a prophetic witness movement. So I'm going to ask them to just set the scene a little bit, not to go into all the depths and the conspiracy theories, but to just generally ramble a little bit about the theme so that we all sort of understand a little bit of what's coming up. Because the mural that caused me the most interest was the mural that they painted where people were sitting happily having a picnic, laughing and joking and feeling quite comfortable and secure, but they did not realise that there was a huge military tank rolling towards them that was going to upset the whole of their life. Now, are we in that situation, and what does it mean?
Thank you for that, Norman. This is Jono. I'm sitting here with Ad. Hello, Ad.
Hello, Jono.
Hello to all our listeners today as well. Ad is somebody who's somewhat more knowledgeable than me, Norman, or anybody else here at Flame on the subject of the Illuminati and all kinds of other conspiracy theories. So today we're just going to tie up a little bit with what was talked about with the Bogside artists and maybe just give people a brief introduction to the ideas of the Illuminati, maybe the New World Order and a few other things. We're not going to go into any great depth. If you want to do that, you can go online, you can Google, I'm sure you could spend the rest of your life investigating a million and one conspiracy theories. So Ad, when did you first get interested in all this kind of stuff?
Oh, probably about 20 years ago now.
So what started it off? What set you off?
This was just coming across a sermon by accident more than anything else about a guy who'd been involved in this stuff and had been born again, been dragged out of it, and he just mentioned it. That set something off in my mind. Then as soon as I started examining what it was all about, that just led to more doors being opened, to more doors being opened, and it's just never stopped really. It's just, I feel like the Lord has put this on my heart for some reason. I'm only just now beginning to understand why that is. I just would like to get the word out there, get it out to other Christians mainly, just so they can understand what this is about.
Absolutely. We're just going to follow on from a few of the things that the Bogside artist said, just to illuminate, if that's the right word, our listeners a little bit more on the ideas of the Illuminati and the New World Order and things that were touched upon by the Bogside artist so far. So they mentioned a quote from John F. Kennedy.
Yes, this was a speech that JFK made in 1963, and I think this was only a few months before the assassination. This might help people to understand why Kennedy was silenced. You know, a lot of people aren't aware that this speech exists. If I read you a little bit from that speech, maybe it'll help you to understand about what this whole Illuminati secret society thing is all about. So would you like to hear what President Kennedy said about this?
Please go ahead.
Kennedy said, "For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of election, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headline. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumour is printed, no secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program, for from that scrutiny comes understanding, and from that understanding comes support or opposition, and both are necessary. I'm not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, and the English people, and European people as well."
So that pretty much covers everything. I think if I'd made that speech this morning, I'd probably be locked up somewhere along the line.
Well, it's pretty succinctly put, isn't it? I think that was probably the reason why they did do off with him. If the Illuminati truly are this big secret society in control of things, then there's no reason why they won't be in control of the presidency as well. And I think that's what JFK was trying to say here. And he was silenced in a very public way.
Absolutely.
Months after this speech.
Okay, so if we're looking back now to, what, 63, when Kennedy was assassinated,
yeah,
and the people he talks about are already this all-pervasive, where did it all start, where did it all begin?
Okay, well, what is considered to be the start of today's Illuminati, what most people understand by the Illuminati is the Bavarian Illuminati, which was brought together on May the 1st in 1776. Even that date of May the 1st is significant. Satanic holiday, May the 1st, it's called Beltane.
Okay.
There was a guy called Adam Weishaupt, who was a professor at Ingolstadt University in Bavaria.
Okay.
He got involved with Meyer Amstel Rothschild, and there was a guy called Giuseppe Mazzini who was involved in this as well. Weishaupt was a defrocked Jesuit priest, from what I understand, so he did have this grudge against the Catholic Church. He had the occult knowledge to begin an organisation like this, or to carry on an organisation like this, so Meyer Rothschild said, "I'll provide the funding, you provide the occult knowledge." This was done on the proviso or understanding that they were never going to get this thing implanted into place within one lifetime or a couple of lifetimes, so they understood that this was going to take hundreds of years for this to fit into place. It was going to start off with a subtle infiltration of politics, sort of like in the President Kennedy thing where it talks about the different areas that they're going to go into. They're going to go into military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political, throw education in there as well. they're trying to get a foot into the door of all these different organisations. I think of it as a spiritual kind of virus. The Illuminati, once you've infected somebody with this virus, the virus grows and grows to a point where over maybe 200-300 years you are actually in charge of these groups. And I think that's the point we're at today on planet Earth in history.
Okay, so it's a big leap that you've made straight away from what the Bauxite artist said and onto President Kennedy's speech.
Yeah.
Straight away you've identified it's not a group of businessmen with business interests. Straight away you've identified it as something occult.
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah, yeah. In any high-level group, there's always going to be somebody who might be that way inclined. Yeah, it's very much an occult society. It's a secret society. What the Illuminati were smart enough to realise from the very beginning was that they needed a secret society that was already established in order to hide their ideas inside of it. Freemasonry was already around at that point.
Okay.
And that was spot on for them to sort of jump into to try and infiltrate. It really didn't take them that long to infiltrate the Freemasonic groups, to the point where the Bavarian ruler Charles Theodore in 1784 actually outlawed the secret societies with the backing of the Catholic Church. This included Freemasonry and Jacobinism. Just because it was banned by the ruler doesn't necessarily mean that it went out of existence. It went underground,
absolutely.
I think, where it's pretty much well stayed until maybe the last 50 years. I think they're relying on the fact that the people are going to find this information so incredible, so impossible, that you know, chances are most people are not going to believe it, even when you put the truth in their face, which is what I'm trying to do with this.
Absolutely, that's one of the reasons we asked you to come in today. I wonder if we could just look at a few broader terms at the moment to try and kind of clarify things for listeners.
Sure.
At the moment, we've talked about the occult. I'm sure, as we're a Christian radio station, people are somewhat aware of the implications of that and what that means. We've talked about Freemasonry, we've talked about the Illuminati, we've touched on the New World Order. Mm. Are they all one and the same thing, or are they different branches?
If we're looking at the whole conspiracy as a spiritual satanic conspiracy, then they are branches of the same tree, but they all do operate independently of each other. If you're looking in modern day society, maybe you could say that the three or four main groups, you would have the Bilderberg Group, the Council on Foreign Relations, maybe the Federal Reserve.
What's the purpose of the Illuminati?
There's a few different opinions on this one. My personal feeling is that they are trying to bring a Luciferian agenda, planet Earth, into the way things are run, basically the way society is run, to get it past the Judeo-Christian, God-centred society, to push it round into this New World Order where we're essentially looking at a Luciferian control structure.
So the New World Order is a way of being or a state of being that the Illuminati are trying to bring the world into?
Kind of, We'll describe it like this. Freemasonry is a secret society. If you ask a Mason what is Freemasonry, they'll tell you it's a system of morality veiled in allegory, which I think is just another way of saying a religion, but they don't really want to say that. Essentially, it's a secret society.
Yeah. Which a lot of people think of as just a bunch of businessmen either getting together with funny handshakes or funny hats.
Pretty much,
and all doing each other favours kind of in the business world.
Well, it's that as well, but I mean, if you take it up a level and you look at the higher levels of Freemasonry, you'll find that it is something a lot more sinister than that. It is a spiritual organisation. This is where Illuminism comes in.
Secret society officially set up in 1776, and we've talked about President Kennedy almost 200 years later. They're giving warnings to the world.
Yeah.
Where does that leave us now?
This is all a matter of discernment for each person to figure out for themselves. I'd encourage anybody to go and look into this. If you don't believe me or you don't think there's a conspiracy, go and look into it yourself. Christians I know have gone and studied this. They've always come back and with their minds completely blown.
So what should we be looking out for? Not necessarily just as Christians, just as people in general. You know, what should we be looking out for today?
There is a lot of very satanic things that have happened as a result of this. If you imagine that they started it in 1776, gave themselves a couple of hundred years to infiltrate banking, politics, business, medicine, philosophy, whatever. Give them that couple of hundred years and they've imagine if they did infiltrate it, that they'd got themselves into these positions of power to a point where they were able to peddle this information to the public. I think that's where we're at now.
Okay.
That we're right on the edge of this New World Order that is not just talked about by Christians, but by New Age leaders, by the Luciferians, by the Satanists, by all of these people are expecting this New Age to start.
So who are the groups we should be looking out for? One of the Bauxite artist lads mentioned something called the Bilderberg Group.
Oh, the Bilderbergers, yeah. This is a group that meets every year in secret circumstances. This is the leaders of industry, the political leaders, the media leaders.
International.
There's people who manage each year to find out where it's being held and who the attendees are. But the whole purpose of this Bilderberg meeting is to bring together the world leaders.
So it's all unofficial.
And this is where we think that they're basically making decisions about what's happening on planet Earth. They're the movers and shakers of society. If you're looking for groups that are similar to the Bilderberg, you want to look into the Council on Foreign Relations.
Who are the Council on Foreign Relations?
It's an American group, which is pretty much dedicated to kind of the same thing, but dealing more with the banking and financial side of things. This is an American group.
Yeah.
You've got the Federal Reserve, who are in charge with doling out the money.
Okay, so this is more the economic side,
pretty much,
as opposed to the political
kind of
moving and shaking, which the Bilderbergers seem to be.
Well, it seems to be, they're sort of inextricably linked, aren't they, the political and the business side. You know, if we look at the banking collapse as well, you could quite easily say, with some good evidence, that this was an Illuminati-based thing, you know. There's a comment that was made by the guy I mentioned earlier, by Mayor Rothschild, the guy who set the variant Illuminati up with Adam Weishaupt. He said, around about that time, he said, "Allow me to control the distribution of countries' finances, and I care not who makes its laws." So what he was saying with that is, if you are the one who distributes the wealth, which you'll find that these groups are, they're the ones who decide how much is going to be printed, distributed, then you don't have to worry about the laws of that society. What he's saying with that is that if you are the one in control of distribution of money, the law, you're the one in control of all these things.
Okay, that makes some sense to my skeptical brain somewhere along the line. If people want to know more, is there one or two people or websites necessary that you'd put people in touch with?
No.
Okay.
There's no website where you can learn about this. You know, go online, by all means, search, seek it out, look into what the Illuminati is, but try and understand that it's changed, that it's morphed into a more modern-day structure, you know. There are obviously people who've come out of the Illuminati who've talked about it, but you're not going to get a website or anything out there that's going to tell you. The very nature of it being a secret society is going to, you know, if you understand spiritually what this group is about, then you're probably going to have a better chance of understanding how it's infiltrated society. I just come out and say it, that these people, the Illuminati, are Luciferians, you know. Ultimately, they are looking at Lucifer as their god.
We mentioned the occult right at the beginning.
Yeah.
If it is Luciferian influenced, if it is occult influenced, it all seems to be pushing towards biblical prophecy. It's pushing towards the book of Revelations and end times, which, you know, a lot of people would say that we're in now.
I think a lot of Christians would agree with that. I think a lot of New Agers and a lot of Luciferians would agree that we're moving into this new world order. It is something that's prophesied, so it's something that's going to happen.
Absolutely.
This idea of pushing people forward into a new eon or a new spiritual way of thinking is definitely there. And this is definitely something that these leaders of these groups are trying to do. You know, they're trying to get us away from the Judeo-Christian God. I personally believe they're looking at Lucifer as their source of power. And just trying to prepare the world, really, to get away from that Christian way of thinking in order that society will get down to it at the lowest level. And that's basically what they've done, to the point where they've got people ready to accept this. They've, you know, they've got inside education destroyed, education prayer in schools. They've got inside the family and destroyed the nuclear family. They've got inside, you know, they've got inside politics. Think of it like a spiritual virus, is how I'd describe it. It seems to be this virus that eats into the fabric of society and just slowly, slowly does its damage, to a point where we're now almost completely under its rule, under its thumb. Let me leave you with this quote from Psalm number 2. "Why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed." So that spells it out quite clearly to me, that there is a conspiracy in place against the Lord and against the anointed of the Lord.
I think it's fascinating and stuff like that.
As Christians, we are supposed to have no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but we're supposed to expose these things.
Okay, Ad, thank you. Our time's done. Thank you very, very much indeed.
Thank you. Anybody
out there listening to this, if you want to drop us a line here at the Flame Studio, if you want to drop us a conspiracy theory of your own, please feel free. We'd love to hear your feedback. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
God bless.
You're listening to Flame Radio on 1521 Medium Wave and online. I'm here with William Kelly and Kevin Hassan of the Bogside Artists. Kevin, if there's one final thing for now that you would say about these works of art and about the Bogside Artists, what would you say?
The message that we're trying to communicate is people who lived in conflict, people who seen things that probably people shouldn't see. And so the murals to us and their message is obviously the message of Christ about truth and justice.
Yeah.
Kevin, if somebody listening to this wanted to find out more about the Bogside Artists, where could they go to?
We have a website. It's simply www.bogsideartists.com. My Derry accent, okay. www.bogsideartists.com. And we also have a Facebook page, and it's very popular, and it's called Bogside Artist Derry. So to your listeners here, John, on Flame Radio, check us out. Check out our story. We also have a book that we put together ourselves, written by Wool. It's available also on our website. And the book tells our story and everything that we have to say, and our history, and also about what was going on around the world as much as what was going on in our own world. So yeah, check us out.
William and Kevin, thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Better read the writing on the wall. Just paint it over. Don't just paint it over. Better read the writing on the wall. Don't just paint it over. Don't just paint it over. Ramallah, Nablus, Gaza, Beit Sahur. It's a litany of pain as we recite the names. Jabalia, Calandia, Janin and Bethlehem. Lest we forget your name, lest we forget the pain. Better read the writing on the wall. Don't just paint it over. Don't just paint it over. Better read the writing on the wall. Don't just paint it over. Don't just paint it over. The soldiers came at midnight. They dragged the family out. With guns, they demanded that they paint the writing out. Oh, but the thickness of the paint cannot conceal the words. The intifada will not end till justice is offering. And if we forget you, or if we remain silent, the stones will call out your name. Yes, they will. If we forget you, or if we remain silent, the stones will call out your name. They'll call Ramallah, Nablus, Gaza, Beit Sahur. It's a litany of pain as we recite the names. Jabalia, Zababli, Janin and Bethlehem. Lest we forget your name, lest we forget the pain. Better read the writing on the wall. Don't just paint it over. Don't just paint it over. Better read the writing on the wall. Don't just paint it over. Don't just paint it over.
Oh,
We've closed the chat room door, but please tune in next time to Flame CCR on 1521 Medium Wave for more from Green Door Studios chat room.
Green Door!
We hope you enjoyed this programme, which is under the copyright of Wirral Christian Media Limited. Details of the Flame CCR broadcasts and webcasts are on our website, www.flameradio.org. Thank you for listening. Flame.